So here's the first question. Dear Longpa Anan, may I know what could be the cause of my cravings to make merits? I see myself hungry for many merits. If there is any meritorious deeds that come by, I see a need to share with my friends. Is this a wholesome right view? I see my intention hoping to end karma by making lots of good karma. Thanks a lot for your guidance.
So the act of doing merit, what that means is that it's the act of bringing about happiness within the heart. But if when we're doing merit, we have this excessive desire for merit, there's a hunger for it, seeking out merit, and that's too much, then there's that hunger there, and that's tanha, that's craving. So when we produce merit, we do meritorious deeds, we have the intention to be selfless, to abandon selfishness, abandon the sense of self, abandon greed. And that is great merit. So if we are doing merit and we want results from that, then that's meritorious as well. And it's all right to be doing that, that we get encouragement to be doing meritorious deeds. And there's these benefits that arise, there are good benefits that will come for us, and when we're aware of that, then we have that encouragement. But as we carry on doing good deeds, then we'll gain more intelligence in the way that we do it. And we'll gain wisdom as well, be more wise, which means that we see that we're creating merit for the sake of abandoning greed. But initially, perhaps we have some amount of greed there for merit, that we want this, but we produce that merit in a way that we're not harming anyone. But if there's that hunger there, then that's tanha, and that's excessive, it's out of balance then. And there are some people who want merit so much that they do it in an unskillful way. So maybe someone comes to the monastery with food to offer to the monks, and someone else takes that food and then offers it instead of them. And the person who brought that food themselves, they feel saddened by that, that someone else has taken my food. And so that there is this hunger, or this craving for merit. It's an excessive wanting. And this is incorrect. But for it to be correct, then we do these good deeds for the sake of selflessness. But we still get the benefits of it as well. So if we have the opportunity to produce goodness, then we do that, and we do it in all different kinds of ways. And we also do it with our wisdom as well. Perhaps we can help people who are in difficulty or people in our community, and whatever we're able to do, then we do that. And if we can share these good deeds with others, invite others to be producing merit as well with us, then that's even better. And so that is samaditti, that's right view. It's kusala, so it's skillful or intelligent. And when we carry on doing that, then what do we feel? We feel in a sense of relaxation and ease within the heart. And we get this feeling that if we have a lot of money, then we just wish to do good deeds with that. And in the end, a question arises within our hearts, which is, well, if we get even more wealth, then what am I going to do with that? Well, I'm going to use that to do meritorious deeds, to do goodness. Because we see that we don't stay in this world for a long time. And the wealth that we have in this world, we can't take any of that with us. So what we use it for is to change that wealth from a very coarse wealth to a subtle, refined wealth, which is merit. Because this merit, it's within our own hearts. And so we can, say, offer food to monks on alms round, and then we do that, that merit gets stored within the heart and collects in the heart. It's all different kinds of goodness, whether we're building, helping to build things in the monastery, a ordination hall, for example, helping people who are going through hardship, and giving to our community and for the public benefit, and helping victims of floods or fires. So if we're able to help, then we help, following our own resources and energy. And this is all good karma that we are creating. And as we do that more and more, and then we also see other people doing those good deeds too, and we anumodana, so we rejoice in that goodness. And when we have the means to be doing those good deeds too, then we also do them as well. And so as we carry on practicing like this, then we see that the merit that's higher than that of generosity is sila, so this virtue. And people who have sila, they're ones who are generous on a consistent basis already. And then they have this firmness in virtue. And then to increase that merit, and they do so with bhavana, with cultivating the mind. Because this bhavana works to produce wisdom in the heart, and we can see the nature of conventions and abandon the sense of self. But we start off with the merit on the level of generosity first, and that then turns into a character trait that we have within us, and we do it consistently. And then we see that, so as we do that, that the merit that we gain from a peaceful heart is even higher. And so there is this, the heart that has sila, so that's a higher level of merit than generosity. And then the heart that has peace, that's a higher level of merit than sila, than virtue. And the heart that is wise, that's a higher level of merit than the heart that has samadhi. And why is that? It's because this wisdom can give purity to our hearts.
Here's question number 2. Dear Venerable Ajahn, in scriptures it is said that in Nibbana there is no nama and rupa. That means when an arahant dies, there will not be nama and rupa arising anymore. But some famous Ajahns say Nibbana is a place which is above the Brahma world. There is existence in Nibbana, and that the citta won't disappear. It goes to Nibbana. But isn't citta consciousness also a form of nama? And Ajahn even says that he rode on a glass horse and went to Nibbana. It was a sparkling place. Arahants and Buddhas have transparent bodies. The cities are transparent too. It contradicts with the scripture.
So according to the scriptures, Nibbana doesn't have rupa or nama. So there's no physicality, there's no mentality there. But if there's still this nama, this rupa, then there will be birth into a realm of existence. And so that could be into the human realm, the deva, the divine realms, or an animal realm, or lower than that into hell, maybe as a pretta or an asura. And so if there is this rupa anama there, then that's what happens. And so the devas, celestial beings, so they have physicality, mentality, which is subtle. And then humans have the physicality, mentality of a middle level. And the animals, it's on a coarse level. And the hell beings, they experience physicality and mentality, which is very painful and torturous. And arahants are those who are far from the kilesas, the defilements, which are greed, hatred, and delusion. These causes and conditions for one to be born into a realm of existence. So in the human realm or the deva realm or even higher than that, there's the Brahma realms. So for those who have entered into jhana, there's the jhana of form or the formless jhana, and they get born into the Brahma realm. And here the mind is very subtle, but it still hasn't destroyed the defilements. And so like the teachers of the Buddha before he awakened, that they were born into the formless Brahma worlds, but their hearts still had defilements in them. But if the heart is devoid of all defilements, then that is the heart of an arahant. And so in that case, and there's no rupa or nama that is appearing. And so one may ask, this nibbana, is it a place? And nibbana, does it exist? Well, it does exist. And so where is it? In what direction? Well, you can't say that it's in any direction. It's not established in a direction. You can't say that it's far or that it's near, but it does exist. The nibbana is purity. And those beings whose minds are pure, then they can enter into nibbana. And so this nibbana is real, it does exist. But there is no one who enters into nibbana. That if they still have a self, then they can't get there. And so we need someone who doesn't have a self, who doesn't have any defilements, whose mind is pure, and that there is nibbana. And so then this mindfulness and the vijnana, this sense consciousness, that is talking about the sense consciousness of the khandhas. And so that which receives sound, for example, or sights, etc. That which becomes pure is the citta, which doesn't attach anymore. It's this pure knowing element that isn't clinging. But that's not nama, it's not a part of mentality. And so the mindfulness that is used is the mindfulness that used to abandon greed, hatred, and delusion. And when this is developed very strongly, it becomes a weapon that we can use. It's a weapon of mindfulness and wisdom. And when that's developed to a full degree already, then it's just a quality that exists, that doesn't belong to anyone, or that's not used by anyone. that there's no attachment, that this mindfulness is me or mine. It's something that arises, stays for a bit, and then ceases. But the one who has developed that, they don't attach to it. There's no attachment to anything. That there's mindfulness which is knowing. And so Nibbana being described as a city, like a glass city or a crystal city, and one goes there riding on a glass horse. That this could be a way of describing Nibbana so that we gain a kind of an understanding or an image of it. That there's this place where there is the highest happiness and there's no suffering there. That one who enters there, they don't need to die, they don't need to get born again. That there's none of that, there's no coming into the cycle of samsara again. And there's no switching between this happiness and suffering, between birth and death. Because Nibbana is that which is freed from birth and death. So therefore, it's not a realm. It's not a level of existence. But does it exist? It does exist. But for one to enter into it, it needs to have a heart which is pure. And so there's this simile or a metaphor which is given of that it being a city. But the truth is that the arahants, that they have this deepest happiness within their hearts already, and that they have a heart which is pure and with no suffering whatsoever. But in order to know this fully and truly, then one needs to practice. Because if we listen to Dharma talks, then we doubt, read the scriptures, and we doubt, and then you listen to this answer that I'm giving, and you're going to doubt this even more, that your doubts aren't going to go away because of that. So you need to practice this sila, samadhi, and panya. So this virtue collected in firm mind and with wisdom. In order to bring the mind to peace and to stillness, and then have great mindfulness, and then use that to contemplate. So contemplate the body as being a collection of earth, water, fire, and air, these physical elements. It's not something attractive. It's just these various elements, which then you see as being empty. And as you do this frequently, then you begin to gain an understanding of that for yourself, and your mind won't be deluded by conventions anymore, and vimutti, its liberation, appears. And so there's this understanding that one gains at that point, that this is what is really able to fix one's suffering, to cure that, and that the Buddha taught just like this, that when we see the truth of conventions, that the mind becomes free and liberated, and the faith, the satta that we have, becomes firm. And in the end, we can realize this purity. And so we can see that purity within our own hearts, and we see that, okay, practicing in this way, it does lead to Nibbana, that this does give us results. And so we don't have any doubts anymore. And that comes through our practice, so may you practice a lot. So right now, you still have these doubts, but you should just put them aside and practice first. And as you do that, then your faith grows. And then one day you see into the nature of conventions, experience liberation, and all the doubts are removed. And we see that the Buddha really didn't have any suffering whatsoever. And this path and the teachings that he taught lead us to the end of suffering. And so may you be very firm in your practice. And as you do that, then eventually you will experience increasing levels of purity in your heart.
I've heard that there are two ways of practicing loving kindness, which are through chanting and radiating it. If the mind is not joyful, it is impossible to radiate loving kindness. My questions are, first, what is the difference between reciting metta repeatedly and radiating loving kindness? Second, what method should beginners use to cultivate loving kindness? Should one recite metta or radiate loving kindness? Third, if one's mind is not joyful, should one refrain from chanting, "May all beings be happy"?
So in the practice of chanting about metta or developing a heart of metta, it's loving kindness. So in the beginning to cultivate loving kindness, that you should be chanting first or using a mantra first, because you're still not skilled at this, and the mind is still not in a place of peace. So to establish the mind in spreading loving kindness can be difficult to do in that case. So therefore you should use a phrase or a mantra first. So may I be happy, may I be well. So spread metta to yourself first. And so after spreading metta to yourself, then you do so with people that you love. So your mother, your father, friends. And then to people who are in the middle, you feel indifferent towards. But don't yet spread it to people who consider you to be their enemy or people who you feel angry at, because you may start off thinking to spread loving kindness to them, but that can easily turn into anger arising. So you need to bring your mind to a state of peace and ease first. But if you're not feeling happy, and you ask, well, in that state, is it appropriate to be wishing other beings to be happy? Well, you can do that. Even though we don't have happiness, that you can still think, may I be happy, and may all beings be happy. So for myself, for all people, all beings, may we all be happy. And we can recite that, we can be chanting that. So to have, for the purpose of being intent in bringing up a heart of loving kindness. Because when we don't have that loving kindness there, then there can be anger instead. So we can recite or chant, may I be happy, may all beings be happy. Be reciting that over and over, and then when we do so, there'll be a lightness and some coolness to the heart. And perhaps we don't feel happiness to begin with, and maybe that is due to there being anger and ill will in the heart, operating and proliferating in the heart. And so we should change that mood then from one of ill will to be chanting that may all beings be happy. Have metta for ourselves first, may I be well, may I be happy, and then for all beings. And we can chant that in Pali, or we can do so in English, whatever, if that chanting the translation helps for the meaning of it to go deeper so we understand. Well, the one who asked is Chinese, so you can be reciting that in Chinese. And then in feeling of coolness and wellness can be there within the heart. And then we can focus on that energy of metta, of loving kindness, and be spreading that to all beings. And so in the Karaniya Metta Sutta, that says that we should spread this heart of loving kindness in all directions. And so all around us, in front and behind and left and right and up and down, and radiating it in all directions. And just like a mother who is pregnant and has this great love for her child. And so we should wish for all beings to be happy and to not come to any harm. And so we can do this. It's fine to practice in this way. And so may you develop this a lot. And then when your heart gains energy, then you'll be able to focus on directly developing that heart of metta.